championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. And today, we're going to be going over some roster stuff with the defensive back position, the linebacker position, the wide receiver position, as the Longhorns lose a few players to attrition, and some names are popping up in different areas of the depth chart. Then we're going to go over some recruiting as Jameer Johnson is committing on July 3rd. Talk about what he would potentially bring to Texas if he committed to Texas. Then look at some of the new targets out there, defensive tackle, defensive end, and tight end, and offensive line. Darius, my man, how are you doing? It's been a month.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm still here. It's been a good while. Excited to get the show going today, man. Hope everything's been good. I've had folks messaging asking when the next show would be. So here we go.
It's been an interesting month. It went from looking like, hey, college football is on its way to happening to, I don't know if college football is happening. It's just kind of been that question going back and forth throughout this entire pandemic.
Like even at the high school ranks. So for example, I mean, here at DeSoto, we've been doing part of a while, but we haven't been able to do a show in a minute. We've been in camp, so we're out there 6-7 hours a day. We've had over 600 plus kids out there every day.
Wow.
And I think out of that total, we've only sent home like 3 or 4. You're taking temperatures every day and everything like that. But you've seen other places across the metroplex, across the state, places have been getting shut down due to kids testing positive. And but you look at a place like Southlake, though, for example, I'm just saying Southlake has had three confirmed positive COVID cases in our student athletes so far, and they're still going. They haven't shut down anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like everybody could get away with that, but I'm interested to see how these next few weeks go for them and see if that number continues to rise or if it plateaus. And if that's the case, then I think that may be our blueprint for what to do, you know, this year instead of shutting everything down. But yeah, like you said, it's one day is this, the next day is another, and it's you know, who knows. But right now we're operating as if we're gonna have a full season, Will. So until further notice, you know, it's business as usual.
Right, and Texas has been doing the same thing, spending millions of dollars in tests, hundreds of thousands of dollars at least in tests, and they've just quarantined and actually I now released about 20 or more kids after they've been in quarantine for either testing positive or have been in proximity with somebody who's tested positive. They have been extremely, extremely careful with this. However, the problem with college football and the reason it might not potentially happen is not everybody is being as careful as programs like Texas. You look at Houston, or you look at all these, you know, you look at Liberty, and you see how little precautions they're taking when it comes to COVID. So when it comes to Texas facing another team, you have to ask the question, are they taking the same precautions as us, and am I putting my players in danger with this disease that we don't really know the long-term effects of it by playing another team?
My thing is, we're talking about football, so like it's the ultimate contact sport. It's unavoidable. You know, folks are going to test positive, right? Like, we understand that. My thing is, like, let me see if I can find it really quickly. I saw something today that I thought was really interesting. It was an anonymous email that was sent from an executive at a Texas ER chain, and he said they see thousands of patients a month, right? Basically, what he was saying, Will, was, am I okay to go ahead and read it real quick? I think it'll take like two minutes. So I'm the managing partner and general counsel of a Texas-based company that owns and operates 13 freestanding emergency clinics in the state of Texas. Blah, blah, blah. Follow your reporting. I want to share with you some information on Texas. I want people to hear this story as opposed to the mainstream reporting. However, I'm sensitive about putting a target on myself, so they wanted to do it anonymously. All right, so this person went on to state, in June, we tested 2,231 patients. This data is through this past Thursday. It said the positive rate, okay, of those 2,200 people is now 20%. Okay, it's close to 20%. It was 4 to 6% in May. So that percentage has gone up, right? But he said the vast majority of the cases are mild to very mild symptoms. The average age of the people getting tested is in their mid-30s. Very different patient in terms of age than that we had before prior. Because remember, it had to be folks that were older, right? So what they're saying is most of these patients wouldn't have met the strict criteria. They wouldn't have gotten tested. So now with more testing kits, we're able to get a broader group of patients. Clinically, he said they've had very few hospital transfers because of COVID. The vast majority of patients are better within 2 to 3 days of the visit, and most would be described as having a cold, a mild one at that, or symptoms related to allergies. We've often provided a steroid shot and some antibiotics, and by the time we have follow-up calls to patients, they are no longer experiencing any symptoms. They often say the shot really made a difference. In terms of driving them to the ER, roughly half of them have been told by their employers to go take the test. More people are getting tested. The other half just want to know. He said they have mild symptoms and some don't have symptoms at all, but game the system and check a box so that they can get a test. Okay, because you can't get a test unless you're present with symptoms. The average length stay of COVID patients is 3 to 5 days, much lower than the patients that were being seen in April and May. Again, because these are younger individuals. He said the symptoms are also milder. As they said, most patients are not ending up in the intensive care unit. They're not in the ICU. The hospital ICUs are filled with really sick people that have non-COVID issues. And the reason he said those same people didn't come in earlier because they were afraid because of all the COVID things that were going on. So from multiple sources at different hospitals, they have plenty of capacity and no shortage of acute care beds. There's no real data breakdown of the patients who have COVID, but they're not in the hospital because of COVID. Recognize that because all patients are tested for COVID, you have some percentage of patients listed as COVID patients who are non-COVID symptomatic, and that in the hospitalization rate is somewhat driven by hospitals taking in their normal patients with other medical issues. So he's saying he's heard stories about how discharge planners are being pressured to put COVID as the primary diagnosis because that pays significantly better. Okay, if you have that down, that's the reason. Hospitals want to avoid the discussion, but if they don't, they risk another shutdown. This may be an explanation for why there's a gap in hospital executives saying that they have plenty of capacity, but there's still an increasing number of COVID hospitalizations. So you open up your hospitals for normal medical care and you test every one of those patients, the result is going to be a higher percentage of folks who have COVID. Since COVID hit, he's saying their emergency room volume has decreased 50% since the month of April. However, the percentage of level 5 ER claims, which is the highest, has doubled. And he's saying that because people that are sick are so scared to come in because of this COVID deal, the folks that are experiencing that have real stuff, it's not that it's not real, but have serious stuff going on, they're not coming in because they're worried about this whole COVID deal. And he's saying based upon what we're seeing at our facilities, the above information is really more of a positive story. Instead of, you know, the negative that's being presented. More folks are getting tested, more folks are coming up positive, but they have minimal symptoms. So it means the fatality rate has gone way, it's down, it's a lot lower than what's being reported, if that makes sense.
Right. Yes, it might have milder symptoms in people, between 14 and 44, which is what I think 80% of the new jump in positive COVID tests has been. It's the fact that you're putting it at risk a lot of different groups, such as lower income families who live in multi-generational housing.
But here's the thing, though. Those same families, Will, and I don't mean to cut you off. Those same families that, like, we have, everybody has that. There's the same families sending these kids to camp right now, Will. That's what I'm saying. It don't seem like folks really care that much. So what's the point? Why are we shutting down? Why are we suspending camp for 2 weeks? That doesn't make sense to me.
We're quarantining because people aren't looking out for themselves. Because
it's unavoidable. You quarantine, right. in my opinion.
But it's, on top of all this, we don't know the long-term effects of this disease.
Sure,
we don't.
And that's
something that you have to weigh when it comes to this. And it's a large reason you should wear a mask. I mean,
sure,
let's
absolutely.
Be clear.
I'm pro,
wear
yeah.
a mask.
No, we wear a mask. Yeah, I'm for all of that. Absolutely. But at the same time, like, I understand. We don't understand. We don't know what's coming next. But, how much longer can, I don't think that shutdown didn't go very well. And something that's been proposed, and let me share this real quick too, that's been proposed to us. There's a possibility that football will actually end up taking place for the high school level. We'll actually begin training camp on February 9th, or the season will begin on February 9th.
Yeah, I'm completely
okay.
Okay,
and it will run all the way through. If you won a state championship, it will run through, we can start camp February 9th, and the last final game will be June 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what that would do then, you still have your summer workouts or whatever, but then we go right back into it in the fall.
Right.
And what you would do is flip basketball, baseball, and track, because a lot of schools, a lot of places share those athletes, right? They would then be the ones doing everything this fall.
Interesting. Interesting.
And yeah. I thought that was interesting. And it doesn't, that way everything still gets played. All those seniors still get to have film, still get to have their season, you know? And, it makes sense, but it'll be interesting. I mean, it's just something that's thrown out there that's been told that it's a real possibility that we may end up doing in Texas.
Right.
And I wonder if that will go to college, if they would do the same kind of thing.
You know, it's anybody's guess how much this really takes effect on the season at this point. But let's go ahead and look at what we can, which is the team and the position battles that are going on or will go on. And have already started to work themselves out as the depth charts break out. You've seen that already in the defensive back position. So for the defensive backs, you're going to have five different positions, right? Two cornerbacks, two safeties, and a spur, which is your nickelback. And Anthony Cook was going to be battling out with Chris Adamora at that spur position. Now, Anthony Cook decided to leave the program. Nobody really knows what the final straw was there, but the fact that Chris Adamora was likely going to start over him probably didn't help convince Anthony Cook to stick around Texas. So Chris Adamora looks like the guy who will be replacing Anthony Cook at that spur position. And that brings up the question, well, who's behind him? Darius, who would you think would fit best behind Chris Adamora at that spur position? And what do you think about Adamora at that spur position?
So if the spur position, from what we understand, they spend a lot of time working with the linebacker group. Looking at that secondary, the guy that fits the bill the most in my mind that would roll down, in my opinion, would be a guy like Chris Brown. And then he would just be replaced at his position by somebody like Tyler Owens or somebody like that. Just so based on the body type, the demeanor, as far as what you're looking for from that position, physicality. Chris Brown's the first name that comes to mind, especially if we're not considering a guy like B.J. Foster a safety anymore, or DeMarvin Overshown a safety. Then, yeah, Chris Brown's the first guy that comes to mind, in my opinion, for a spot like that behind Adam Moore.
Well, I was thinking maybe you put B.J. Foster as a starter there and have Adam Moore be your backup, but B.J. Foster is being hinted to go to the linebacker. I wonder if that's still going on with Cook leaving the program. I wonder if you move B.J. Foster into that spur position. It's still going to be up on the line. It's going to be working with the linebackers. You have the option of blitzing him off the edge and having him be a pseudo linebacker at that spur position, but still be able to use his athleticism to go backwards.
Texas, the good thing about Texas is, yeah, they've got more options than a lot of places as far as in that defensive backfield. BJ is definitely a guy you want going forward more than backwards, in my opinion, but yeah, he definitely fits the build as well. But Chris Adamora, he's a guy I'm really excited about because of what he brings, not just in coverage, but he's also a really good. He's good as far as my opinion from just flashes. I think he's got a chance to be the most complete safety out of those guys back there over the next year or two.
Right, and then you can also partly put Josh Thompson in the middle because he's played nickelback in the past. He's a physical guy. But they really like him at cornerback. And speaking about cornerbacks, you look like you have a five-way battle going on for that cornerback position between Jalen Green, Deshaun Jameson, Josh Thompson, Kobe Boyce, and Kenyatta Watson. And I've really heard some great things about Kenyatta Watson, that he may actually get some runtime amongst these five guys because he has just impressed the coaching staff that much.
Yeah, Kenyatta Watson is a guy that he got better as the year went on. I think he did. Was he able? Did he maintained his red shirt? Kenyatta Watson's a red shirt freshman this year.
Let me check that, but I think so. Yeah.
So I thought he definitely is a guy that got better as the year went along. You can his size at the position stands out when watching him when we watch Texas play. I like Kenyatta Watson. I'm excited about his upside, but just going off based on what we know about the corners that are still here, my money would still be on Deshaun Jameson and Jalen Green being the starters. But, you know, Josh Thompson and Kenyatta Watson will absolutely see action, and so will Kobe Boyce. But I think it ended up being Green and Jameson.
Right, and I know that Chris Ash, as soon as he came in here, was like, Josh Thompson's my guy out on the cornerback because he really likes the speed.
He liked the eyeball test with Josh Thompson.
Exactly, exactly. So we'll see. We'll see what happens when they actually start to practice in the fall, hoping they practice in the fall. But I think that the cornerback position, as you said, Jalen Green is probably going to be your starter there. And I'm interested to see who wins that second position between DeSean Jamison, Josh Thompson, and Kenyatta Watson. And Kobe Boyce, I wonder if you move him inside behind at spur, because he's not exceptionally fast, but he's a guy who probably would be able to stick his nose into piles.
I don't know about that, but I actually think, I know how you said you think Jalen Green, I would bet on DeSean Jamison. DeSean Jamison is the guy that needs to for sure be out there. I feel like it is more of a battle between Jalen Green and Josh Thompson, those guys, him and Watson, because just John Jameson, he's the guy that takes the ball away. You know, he has to be out there, and he's got the ability, he's got the speed to make up when he makes mistakes. DeSean Jameson, in my opinion, is the closest guy out of those corners so far. He's the one that's put the most on tape. Out of all of them, I think Jameson's got his spot locked down. But we'll see.
I'm a Jalen Green fan. Why? Personally.
What is he? I heard about him as a recruit. I watched him, even though he was playing. He was an offensive guy. He was a quarterback.
In the time he was out there last year, I liked what I saw. I really liked what I saw. I thought he was having been actually only playing that cornerback, you know, that defensive back position for what, 3-4 years. I think he's pretty good. I think he's a guy who could definitely make a name for himself his junior year, and if not his senior year, for sure.
I mean, I hear that. I hear people speak lowingly about Jalen Green. I personally, over these, and he's been banged up a lot, but I've been a little bit disappointed in Jalen Green to this point, just me personally. But yeah, of course, the sky's the limit as far as his potential. But at some point, you know, but that potential has to. I'm wanting more from Jalen Green, so we'll see this upcoming season. And moving forward, but I'm not as high on him as you are right now.
I think for your boundary corner, you want Jalen Green. For your field side corner, you got DeSean Jamison.
They're good problems to have either way.
That's true.
But I like that guy.
The defensive backfield, as long as what happened last year with all the injuries doesn't happen this year, assuming they can learn to tackle correctly, it's a good problem to have. The problem of so many talented players, where do I put them all?
Mm-hmm.
It's the problem that Texas has had in 2018 and now they have in 2020. So that's the opposite problem you have with the linebacker room, where you have a lot of unknown players and unknown talents coming into your linebacker position. And probably the most talented player you have right now in there is DeMarvian Overshown, who is not a linebacker traditionally. Now you put, 20 pounds on him and all of a sudden he's a linebacker. But behind him, I think the guy who I trust the most at this position is Marcus Tillman, and he got injured halfway through last year. Jawan Mitchell, is threatening to leave. If he might put his name in the transfer portal if he doesn't beat out DeMarvian Overshown for that spot, who knows? But he's kind of had one foot in, one foot out since, February when he put his name in the transfer portal. Jawan Mitchell is a fast guy. Aodelia Deowe is a guy who definitely your more traditional middle linebacker role. Between those three guys who I think would probably be starters, I like Marcus Tillman out of that. And then behind that, David Benda and Jalen Ford coming, Jalen Ford coming in. It's sort of a big battle of unknowns at that position that I'm not confident in. Besides DeMarvian Overshown, I think, and Jalen Hullaby, but I think beyond DeMarvian Overshown, I'm not entirely comfortable with what you have at linebacker.
You've seen a lot more. You a lot higher on Marcus Tillman. I mean, I like Marcus Tillman. I thought he's a good special teams guy. I didn't see anything that I thought made him a standout as far as being a member of the defense yet. We've seen DeMarvian Overshown when he's healthy. DeMarvian Overshown impacts the football game. He did it from a safety position. His physicality is part of what makes him special in that regard. That translates to linebacker. It does. Now, is he going to overrun some plays sometimes? Absolutely. But I think DeMarvian Overshown, I'm more excited about him. And then if B.J. Foster does go to linebacker, B.J. Foster and DeMarvian Overshown, that's where they, in my opinion, when I watched them coming out of high school, I thought that's where they were going to be. I thought that's what they were in the first place. All right, Texas, again, they took six of those guys. They took six.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought those two guys were the ones that had potential to roll down.
And B.J. Foster at linebacker, you know, I'm a little hesitant because right now, what is he, 210? Mm-hmm. You probably have to put 15 more pounds on him before the season to –
I don't think so. I mean,
you don't think so. But when I think about him, the linebacker role, I think back to 2018 against Oklahoma. Oh, he was probably 2010 back then, and he was a force up front against the run. And he made some big hits, including one very important hit on Oklahoma's side of the field. He's a guy who, like you said, he's good in the box. He's really good in the box.
As a linebacker though, playing linebacker, B.J. Foster will be a standout in coverage as well. He's a plus athlete in coverage playing linebacker. He might be average in coverage as a safety, but playing linebacker covering tight ends, that fits him way better than trying to be a center field kind of guy, in my opinion. Overshawn and Foster both around the line of scrimmages. Mm-hmm. That should have everybody that follows the program, in my opinion, drooling about what that's supposed to look like, because that's exciting. So if they can get Juwan Mitchell, if Juwan Mitchell sticks around and he's your Mike, and you got freaking Overshawn and B.J. Foster playing your outside linebackers, I don't think that's a dream come true for me. That's a dream come true. Overshawn, I'm trying to think. Overshawn at 215 is fine. Okay, B.J. at 210, 215 is fine. Levante David still plays at what, 210 now? C.J. Mosley's 220. 225. These linebackers aren't big. Devin Bush is 225. These linebackers aren't
like
big
to get
anymore.
10
Will,
more
they got to be able
BJ
to run.
Foster.
Sure, but I mean, hell, is this? June?
Think about him going up against a guy like Trey Sermon. Like that's like he yeah he'll,
gonna,
he can take a few hits,
break,
but he's not gonna
Trey Sermon down. Oh no, man, BJ Foster. We talk about BJ Foster. We talk about BJ Foster. We're concerned about BJ Foster in a collision.
No, I mean, repeated collisions at the linebacker position coming from the safety is different than being
born to be
than
a
being
linebacker.
A linebacker.
He's born to be a linebacker. So is Marvin.
Oh, yeah, I understand that, but it's what can his body take?
Them. I'm not worried about them in no contact.
What can his body take?
It's football, man. He's gonna get hurt. Folks are gonna get hurt. You're gonna play through it. I'm not worried about them. If those guys
I don't
are
doubt that he has the mentality of the linebacker. I'm saying, can his body withstand repeated hits against, you know, a big running back in the
gaps?
It's
not even B.J. Foster's body. B.J. Foster's track record going back to high school shows you that he's going to get hurt. He gets hurt. Even soft tissue, B.J. Foster, it's just some guys like that. B.J. Foster gets hurt. So you know what? If I only got B.J. Foster for 6 games, Will, then damn it, I want him those 6 games at linebacker instead of safety. Shit, okay. That's going to be the best 6 games? No, he's a linebacker, man.
And then after that, you got Marcus Tillman, Adeyeye, and then it's up to, you know, behind that, I wonder what you do. You know, if you have Court Jacques.
Remember, Adeyeye's got that broken. He's got that foot. Was that a Les Frank? Like, he might not be available.
I don't know. But Bendel, losing to Gabriel Floyd really, really messed up this room.
Yeah, that messed up.
Really messed up this room. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. It's going to be interesting. I really like Jalen Ford. I really liked his tape as a freshman. As a high schooler, we'll see what happens there. And David Benda, I'm interested to see.
He was out there at Kansas. David Benda, he didn't have a good game against Kansas.
I do like Marcus Tillman. And I think the little that you saw of Marcus Tillman at the very beginning of the season, I liked it.
What game was this? I'm going blank on this. I remember the spring game. I like Marcus Tillman, but he's not in the same. We're going to put him in his team. We're going to put him over Overshawn and Foster?
No, I'm not putting him over Overshawn and Foster. He played in the first 4 games of the season.
I remember him running down.
He got injured in the Oklahoma State game. And he was really good in the Oklahoma State game until he got injured.
He was playing. He was on defense?
Yeah.
I do not remember that. I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
I really liked the little that I saw of Marcus Tillman. I thought he was, you know, and that could just be a sample. Small sample size bias, but, you know, we'll see. And I know that the last staff was pretty high on Marcus Tillman in general. So we'll see. We'll see. And behind that, you know, Court Jacques and Jet Bush, you have depth at the position again, but it's just a bunch of question marks. Where do you do after DeMarvin Overshawn and potentially B.J. Foster? Right, who do you put in there, and how confident
respect.
Are you?
We
got to
put
that?
Some respect on Court Jacques, though. He was out there. He was out there with the neck roll, putting it on folks in that bowl.
Dude, that neck roll! I really wish more players played with it.
He played well. Like, I'm fine with him.
Yeah,
I'm fine. That's true. I know he might not look great or look the part, but no, I like him.
All right. And the next biggest question mark for the team is that wide receiver position. You have Brendan Eagles is obviously your first guy, and he's running really well with the size he has. He's added size, and he's still as fast
and
as athletic.
How heavy is Brendan Eagle? Be careful about that.
Oh, boy. How heavy is he? Let me give you the official number. Because
he's still
got
to be able to get in and out of his. That's his thing, getting in and out of breaks and stuff.
Brendan Eagles is 230, so he's probably looking at about 235 right now.
All right.
6'4", 230, 235. I mean, that's pretty big, but he's got size.
I'm
he's got the
to
speed
see what it
for
looks
it.
Like.
We'll see, but I think right now the staff is pretty high on what they have in Brendan Eagles. It's the question mark. The question there is, what do you do with the rest of the talent you have? Let me run through the list of names. Jake Smith, Jordan Whittington, Marcus Washington, Tariq Black now. Josh Moore is back with the team. Alvante Woodard is hanging out there in the wings. Kennedy Lewis is back with the team. You've added Kelvonte Dixon, Troy Omere, and Dejon Harrison. So what do you do with that mix of players? Now, obviously, with Kelvonte Dixon, Troy Omere, and Dejon Harrison, you're likely going to keep those guys off the field and give them red shirts and let them learn behind these players and learn the position. Now, with Jake Smith, Jordan Whittington, Josh Moore, what do you do with those three guys in the slot? Only one probably can play at that slot position. Maybe you move them out to Z position for a few plays, but then that means you're messing with Marcus Washington and Tariq Black, who are both really good players. I think Marcus Washington may silently be one of the best wide receivers on this team because he's a great route runner. He's very athletic. He's got decent hands. He didn't really show them last year, but I know he has good hands. And Tariq Black is a guy who is very dependable and has a very high ceiling. So what do you do with all this talent in this wide receiver room next year, or at least all these bodies in this wide receiver room?
Well, I'll go on record and say that I don't think Brendan Eagles is going to be the leading receiver. I don't think Brendan Eagles will be one of the top two receivers this upcoming season, if we have a season. I think Jake Smith, okay, is going to be your top guy. And I think a guy like you said, Marcus Washington, okay, can maybe come into play. Maybe even Josh Moore. Josh Moore is a good player. We forget Josh Moore can play outside and inside. And he forced himself onto the field as a true freshman. For folks that don't remember, but Jake Smith had 6 touchdowns last year, and that was with Texas. He got benched for 1 game or 2 games. Was it? I think was he muffin punts? Jake Smith's the guy. And if Jordan Whittington is healthy, if Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington aren't on the field at the same time in certain scenarios, certain packages, then I'm going to be very disappointed in Mike Yurcich, okay? Because there's no excuse for that, in my opinion. I don't care who's out. You take Washington. I like Washington. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. The only play that I remember from Marcus Washington was the catch, and I think he spun out of a tackle. I don't remember what game that was, maybe West Virginia or something like that. But I think he's still a young developing guy. I think he gets blocked with a guy like Tariq Black coming in. Mm-hmm. I think that really hurt. Well, it's going to be a competition, but somebody there is not going to get to play. Or they're not going to play as much as they think they should be playing. And I just – Tariq Black, I feel like no disrespect, but he's transferring for a reason. So I don't know how high I am on him right now either until I get to see him. But I'm guys like Jake Smith, if Jordan Whittington is healthy, I'm really high. I really like Josh Moore. I'm excited about those three guys. I think we'll see all three of them playing this season and making an impact. I think Jake Smith's going to be your leading receiver.
So you're going to put all three of those guys on the field. You're going to have
– I can see situations
where – Where are you putting Jake Smith? Where are you putting Jordan Whittington? And where are you putting Josh Moore?
Josh Moore can play outside for me, or he can play inside. I guess, yeah, the thing would be they're all three inside guys. But when Texas – depending on the situation, Will. So if we're going 5 wide, no tight end, and we're going empty with 5, then no problem, right? You're going 4 receivers. If I got 4 guys out there, give me Brendan Eagles – give me Jake, give me Whittington in the slot, and give me whoever's the best out of Josh Moore, Marcus Washington, and Tariq Black. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But I feel like I need Smith, I need Whittington, I need Eagles, I need those three on the field.
I guess you could put Smith at Z. I don't know if you could put Whittington out there. I just don't know. I don't know if you could. You might. you might be able to. I think Smith would fit out at that field position.
Absolutely.
That outside field.
I mean, wasn't that what he was doing prior to the shutdown? Matter of fact, Jake Smith was doing a little bit of playing outside, working at Z during winter workouts.
All I've seen so far from workouts, like physical video, is a nasty, nasty catch by Bijan Robinson. And just, my God, that dude is just built. That dude is built.
I'm excited. I haven't been as excited about a player coming into the Texas program, I think, as Bijan Robinson since maybe
Malik Jefferson.
I wasn't that. No. Malik Jefferson's a defensive
dude,
player. He's a
Malik
defensive
Jefferson
player.
Malik Jefferson was. Not everybody was so Will, excited. He Will, was the mayor
I,
of
I
Austin.
I saw Malik in
Come
high
on,
school,
dude.
Man. I saw Malik in high school. I wasn't. Nah, it wasn't. Not for me. It wasn't Malik. Malik and honestly, Will, Malik doesn't make my maybe top five. But I haven't. No, if I had to go back and look through it, but I haven't been as excited about a guy since maybe what Jordan Hicks. Just highly rated. Like Bijan Robinson looks like a monster. Like when we first got to school in the summer, you do 7-on-7. It was apparent immediately, right, that Jordan Hicks was the real deal. That stood out. That's a different guy. All right. You watch Bijan Robinson play. You watch him. Just watch him on that clip, that video. That's a different guy. Mm-hmm. So I haven't been as excited about a player as him in maybe nearly a decade. I hope he stays healthy.
That's true. But yeah, going back to the wide receivers, it's an interesting dilemma you have there. And what I think ends up happening is you have a guy like Brennan Eagles down on the outside as your boundary wide receiver, outside boundary wide receiver. You have probably Jake Smith in there or Jordan Whittington in at slot. And then it's just going to be an all-out battle at Z. And the coaching staff is likely going to be just mixing in guys at that Z position, just trying to throw bodies at that problem until they find somebody who sticks and is good.
And here's the thing, too, because I know folks are frustrated about wide receiver recruiting, but, like, Jake Smith's going to be a true sophomore. Jordan Winston's going to be a redshirt freshman. Marcus Washington's going to be a redshirt freshman. Josh Moore is going to be a sophomore this year. Like, Texas has plenty, plenty of young talent at wide receiver. Brendan Eagles is a junior this year. I don't see him as an NFL guy right now. So Texas has plenty of talent at wide receiver. So we can calm down a little bit about
the wide
receiver.
I think Brennan Eagles goes to the NFL if he has
a good
year.
If Brennan Eagles is good enough to go to the NFL after next season, then that likely means he had a hell of a year. That means Sam Ehlinger had a hell of a year, which means Texas had a hell of a year. So I'm all with it. I'm all about it, all for it.
That'd be great. Okay. I'm all on board for Brennan Eagles going to the NFL. So let's go ahead and get into recruiting since people are – complaining to you about that for the wide receivers. Texas is in a battle right now for the cornerback position with a guy, Jameer Johnson. He's a 6 foot, 170-ish, out of Pasadena, California, cornerback. He is committing on July 3rd. He is a guy who was likely going to commit to Oregon, but Oregon has filled up. They have 3 cornerbacks right now, one of them being a JUCO player. So it's going down to his probably second and third teams, which are Texas and Colorado. Texas right now probably leading the way there, and I feel pretty confident about Texas's chances here so far. So, Darius, let me ask you this question. Having you and I today watched a game or three of film on him, 3 full games. Where do you think he would rank in this class and Texas?
No, so first off, like you were saying, he's down to actually, what Kay was saying earlier, the actual threat right now, Texas expected to be the choice. He wanted Oregon's what he wanted, but they failed up. He waited too long. Arizona State is supposed to be the team to keep an eye on there. You know, those guys been recruiting their butt off with all those NFL guys on staff. But I appreciate you sending those full games over. Full games are the best way to evaluate. That's how you get the true picture of what a kid is, you know, instead of just the highlights. And when I watched Jameer Johnson, I had to go to the highlights to get a better idea because, like you said, watching him at cornerback, he didn't necessarily stand out to me as a, when I hear a guy as a 4-star recruit, that guy is supposed to stand out. And I didn't think Jameer stood out in that type of way. But when I go look at his highlights of, I guess, different games, you see when he has the ball in his hands, he comes to life. He's athletic. He's fluid. He's explosive. Even watching him play cornerback, he's an athlete. Okay. He oozes athleticism, but he looks so unpolished right now. Okay. He's not. Right. He's rated as a 4-star based more on what his potential could be instead of what he is currently.
Right.
And I think that I absolutely think that all the tools are there. If he's a guy that you have to coach up, though. Like, he's not going to be a guy I think that's going to come in as a freshman and you can put him out there and rely on him to have an impact. I think he's going to need some time. Okay. He plays a little bit as a freshman. You still redshirt him. And I think in a couple years, you know, depending on how quickly he adapts, because again, I like him as an athlete. He's smooth. He's a better athlete than a guy like Kobe Boyce, for example, or I'm not super familiar with Marquise Caldwell, but in my opinion, he's a better prospect than those two kind of guys.
He's a better athlete than Marquise Caldwell for sure.
So I think he's a better prospect than guys like Boyce and Caldwell. Okay, and I think if he was in the state of Texas, if he lived in Texas, if he was in this class, I would. Again, I'm not y'all. You know, I'm not excited. I'm not very high on this cornerback class this year. But I think. At this point, though, I would still go McCutcheon, a healthy McCutcheon. I still go Harmon. I go Ibrahim. And then I start talking about Johnson in a tier below those guys right now at this point. But I think right. He's a good take. He's not a star, you know what I'm saying, or anything like that. But I think he's a good take. And I think he has a chance to be an impact player if things were to work out the correct way. He's got a high upside.
And he did miss. He missed the first 5 games of the season due to a lower body injury, I believe. So I'm interested to see how he does in his senior year, if he plays the senior year, if that was a hamper on his abilities there. Also, being the second cornerback to a guy who was a 4-star cornerback, was really good, actually, in going to UCLA. He was the second cornerback to him. So he was the guy who was getting consistently targeted at that, you know, as a cornerback, that's usually the guy who doesn't look as good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what he does his senior year and if he can stand out more. But as you said, it was my understanding too, that guy is much more an athlete than he is a cornerback right now. It's going to be up to a guy like Jay Valai to coach that guy up and make him understand the basics of his position. And really, really, the one thing that was my biggest concern, and I guess not concern, it's my biggest gripe with his film, was his reticence to hit. He did not like to get his nose dirty. And I understand that that happens a lot of times with high school defensive backs, and then they get to college, and the college coaches are like, you're going to get your nose in there, or you're going to get off the team. So it'll be interesting to see how he transitions there when he becomes more of a football player than he is an athlete. As a prospect, he's got the body, he's got the athleticism, he's got the speed, he's got the fluidity, he's got the hips. It's everything else.
As far on the tackling, and as I'm glad you mentioned the injury, you wonder if that played a little bit of a part. And there are clips there. There are times where he'll engage with a defender, but no, he's not a good tackler at this stage. And again, I just wonder how much of that is him having to this point having been primarily an offensive guy. Again, I felt like he looked a lot more natural and comfortable. Like, even when he gets the interception, he comes up with the ball, he comes to life. I just wonder how much of that is just he needs more time on that side, and over time, the more reps you get, the more contact, the more situations you get into where you can't turn that contact down. I think we'll see him improve in that area. That's the hope. And like we were talking about before, before we got on here, if folks saw Michael Huff coming out of Irving Nimitz back in the early 2000s, you wouldn't have thought, you would have been like, what the heck is Texas doing? Like, he doesn't want any contact. This guy's not going to hit anybody. What are they? And you're moving him to safety? That's crazy. Okay. A big part of Jameer Johnson's development and what ended up being a huge part of Michael Huff's development is going to be how he's coached. So if we see, I think he's the guy that you can see improvement with tackling. Will. It's a want-to thing. I get what you're saying there, though.
Same thing with taking on blocks, same thing with going up against guys who are bigger than him at wide receiver. And those are some issues I saw. It's just things that are going to have to be coached, things that are going to have to be drilled out of him once he comes to college. We'll see how it happens, but he has the tools. Let's see if they can be sculpted.
He's a good looking kid.
Yeah, true. So let's go ahead and take a look at the other targets that Texas is looking at after Jahmyr Johnson. So a few other out-of-state guys, a few in-state guys to talk about. We'll start off at the defensive line position because Texas, so the top seven guys in the state, you have Jatavion Sanders, you have Landon Jackson, Clayton Smith, Shamar Turner, Marcus Burris, Tamishia Adelier, if you still want to call him in-state, and I guess Jordan Thompson, you have the number one and the number seven of those guys. So you've missed on, what, five other guys you really wanted. Now, it's you're not going to get everybody, but there are a few guys that they missed on that they probably could have done better. And Shamar Turner doesn't look like he looks like he's got hard eyes for the SEC.
We'll come back to that.
Well, we'll see. But
You've got folks with Shamar. You've got folks in Texas's corner with Shamar. I think that one, a few weeks ago, I know I said I was thinking he was leaning SEC, mainly Alabama, LSU. Well, I'm backing off of that with Shamar. So I think it's even. Texas still has a chance there. But go ahead. You're right. No, you can't. They've missed on a lot of guys.
They missed on a few guys here. So they're trying to come up with some backup plans here. Because, again, it's hard to convince a guy to go up against a five-star defensive end behind a guy in, like defensive end in Alfred Collins, or behind at defensive tackle in Vernon Broughton. And then you also have a bunch of young guys behind that. I mean, Keandre Coburn's going to be a redshirt sophomore this year. Mora Ojimo, Devondre Sweat, all those guys are just going to be sophomores. So you can see it's taking a toll on recruiting at that position, because Texas has actually done, and Giles has actually done, a pretty darn good job of nailing that position in the past few recruiting cycles. Again, they're looking at other positions. They're looking at other targets and trying to do some more evaluation in case they miss on a guy like Shamar Turner, or they can't convince a guy like Landon Jackson to take a second look and ditch LSU. Arden Walker is one of the newest guys that they've been targeting out of Inglewood, Colorado, 6'4", 240 pounds. The one thing that really stuck out to me about Arden Walker is not the quality, it's the quantity of highlights he had. That dude has four highlight reels, two for running plays and two for passing plays. That dude has a lot of highlights, and most of the time, I mean, they're not eye-popping, but they're pretty good. For a mid three-star guy, I think if he was a little quicker or he weighed, 10 pounds more, that dude is probably a four-star.
Hey, or if he was able to participate in any camps this spring. But fun fact about Arden Walker. Arden Walker's father, Arthur Walker, was actually committed to Texas, okay, at one point back in the, I want to say the late 1980s. Might be early 1990s before switching his commitment to Colorado. So dad is very familiar with the Texas program. They're actually originally from Texas. They're from Houston. His dad is from Houston. So I thought that was interesting to find that out about him. And no, Arden Walker's a guy. I like him. I like him on tape. He will fall somewhere in that tier. In my opinion, he'll be somewhere, you know, with guys like Terrell Tillman, Jordan Thomas, that kind of tier, you know, somewhere in state top 50, top 65 type guy. I like him. I think he's got a lot of tools to work with. He's got the bloodlines. Again, dad played at Colorado, was a starter for multiple years. Dad played in the NFL for a little bit. There are a lot of things I like about Arden Walker, and he's a guy, you know, again, based on his genetics, he's a guy that's probably going to end up being, you know, 270, 280 pounds one day. So he's got could have position versatility as well.
I think Arden Walker fits best at Texas at three tech. He's not a guy you stick at the one tech at nose guard and you say, be a mauler up front and eat space. He's a guy who you say, use your length and use your quickness to get to the quarterback, but also keep an eye out for that run game. That's what you do with a guy like Arden Walker. He's not quite your defensive end. He's not quite your nose tackle. He's somewhere in between, and that's the versatility that you want out of a defensive lineman, that and his length and quickness. So I what really impressed me about him was that I think he needs potentially a little bit more strength and a little bit more quickness, just a little bit more of, you know, those measurable traits. But other than that, I think he is a guy who would be a really good evaluation piece.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. I like Arden Walker, and I think that's one that I think that's one to keep an eye on if we're able to get back to there being visits to be taken. I think that's one to keep an eye on.
Right. I believe didn't you already put out that he took a virtual visit to Texas?
Yes, he has done a virtual visit already. So again, he's interested, he's excited, but he took actual physical trips to Oklahoma and A&M prior to everything happening.
We'll see what happens when everything opens up again, if it opens up again. But Arden Walker right now seems, you know, if it were today, I guess I'd put my money on Texas, but I don't know.
I feel like the longer a decision takes, I feel like the better for Texas. If he's not able to get out to campus to take an actual visit, though, I think it'd be hard to keep him away from some of those closer schools, you know, like in the Pac-12.
Colorado, like
right.
Utah, places like that, even Nebraska.
Places he's more familiar with, right. But he does have, have ties to the state. So, you know, you could be right. It remains to be seen there. But he's wanting to keep a foul that name away.
Another guy who is closer to Texas is Ike Iwana. And you see him and you see he's a load of three mid-star. And he's 6'4", 275. He's a guy out of Lakeview Centennial. Darius, remind me, who's the big name at Lakeview Centennial right now?
I think it's a running back name. I think his name's Kamar Wheaton, something like that.
Exactly. So not only is targeting a guy like Ike Iwana going to potentially help there with Kamar Wheaton, who is the top running back in the nation. This dude at 6'4", 275, he's pretty darn good. When you watch his film, he's not just a guy to get Kamar Wheaton. He's a guy who is actually pretty he's your Mahler up front. He's sort of your Keandre Coburn piece, where you stick him at the one position, that one tech, and you say, be a Mahler up front. Eat space and use your strength to push back those guards. That's what you use him for, and he does a phenomenal job at a high level.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. I saw his name. He was a guy that was getting his stock was increasing early on in the spring. I was surprised though when I turned on his highlights. I haven't seen him play a full game, and I'm not 100% sure about that 6'4". I think that might be more like 6'2.5". But his get off, his first step was impressive. I was surprised, and
true.
Just based on
for
that
a big
alone,
guy like that,
yeah, just based on that alone, at his size, I mean, right there, if he don't learn anything else, that's a his quickness alone gives him a chance to be disruptive. So when that's the baseline that you're starting from, I mean, the sky's the limit. You know, if he's willing to take coaching, if he understands, if he have a passion for the game, this is a guy that you end up never hearing about. Texas never offers, and then he goes to TCU or something, and you're like, damn, he's All Big 12, two seasons. You know what I'm saying? He's that type right. of. I think he's got that type of upside. But no, I like Ike Iwana. Again, it's just. I know it sounds like it's to some people. It might sound like, oh my God, every guy, every player is a hidden gem as a 3-star. But the truth is, it's really not that big a difference between a kid being rated 3 stars or 4 stars. I mean, like you just said, Arden Walker is considered 3 stars at 6'4", 240, but. If I go pull up Jordan Thomas's profile, he's listed at what, 6'2", 6'3", 240? Like, what's the difference? It's opinion, you know, and where you play. There could be there's some bias in there. It's little things. It's really just on the opinion of whoever's putting it in at that point.
Especially 3 stars this year, due to the fact that there are no camps.
Right.
There's no really visiting. You know, a lot of the times evaluators for these sites go out and visit the camps, and then they get their feelings that way. They talk to coaches and say, who do you like here and who do you like there? The fact that there's no camps, there's no visits like that, means that 3 stars are going to stick at 3 stars. There's no movement up or down.
Right.
So those 3 stars, those hidden gems, are actually hidden gems this year.
Right. And there are so many kids out there. There are so many. Mm-hmm. And only what, 300 in the whole country get labeled as a 4-star? Like, there's naturally going to be 20, 30 times more kids that get rated as 3 stars for different reasons. But I like Iwana. I think he's got a chance to be a really good player.
Plus, he's got a really, really good last name. Yep. For making puns and for writing about That dude, if he goes to Texas, it's going to be really easy to write about him if he's good.
Yeah, and the
I want to hope he's good.
The commentators will wear that. They're going to wear that out if they get a chance.
I want to think of a better pun for his last name. I want to use his last name in a lot of different articles.
You just said you just did it.
That's the joke, Darius.
Oh my God.
All right, let's talk about another guy from the same high school as Arden Walker, Gunnar Helm. So the tight end, 6'5", 6'4", 225, same school again as Arden Walker. He has the body type for your tight end position, but the tight end position, especially at Texas, seems to be a position where the mental eval matters more than the physical and the skill. Being willing to get dirty, to grind, and be gritty is the reason why guys like Jared Wiley and Andrew Beck had taken so well to the position. You cannot get a guy who is a prima donna wide receiver type of player in that position. That just doesn't work. There's a guy who needs to be able to be a team player, be a guy who is willing to not be in the limelight, and really, again, get his nose dirty. Does Gunnar Helm have that type of mentality? I don't think we know. We can't. We personally don't know because we've never met him.
There's no way to know that. But yeah, based on just physically what he puts on tape, he actually, the first thing I thought of when I was watching him, he makes some really nice grabs. He looks to be every bit of that 6'4", 6'5". But when I saw him, he actually reminded me of a guy that's already on Texas's roster. I thought he looked a lot like Braden Lebrock, who we haven't heard anything about.
He looks like thicker Braden Lebrock.
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm not gonna panic yet on Lebrock. You know, he's just gonna be a redshirt freshman. But yeah, Gunnar Helms, he's a fluid athlete, despite his height. I think his team split him out wide a few times and threw him fades in the red zone. You saw him making plays up the seam from his tight end position. He definitely profiles. He's more of a receiver. I'm trying to remember. I think there were a few clips of him blocking, but I wouldn't say that's a strong suit right now. I will say I like him better than the two guys Texas lost. I like him better than Lake McCree. I like him better than Landon King as far as being a tight end prospect.
True.
But I do know that he is, he's been in Nebraska, has been recruiting him for a long time, as has a program like Iowa. And no disrespect, but Texas can't compare when it comes to tight end development to a school like Iowa. So, the Hawkeyes and Notre Dame, like it's someplace in Stanford, they put those guys out. But they got some stiff competition for him. But if they can get him on campus, if he's a guy that, if somebody were ever to swing that, I think they'd be doing backflips in there because I think he's a really talented receiver.
So then the question is, what do you do with a guy in Juan Davis? Juan Davis, who right now he's an athlete, he's raw, he's big, he's fast. For his size, what do you do with Juan Davis? The things that I've heard are you move him out to wide receiver and you play him in a little Jordan Humphrey role. Now, whenever anybody tries to say, make him little Jordan Humphrey or make him Colin Johnson, I always want to stop and say, you can't do that. Little Jordan Humphrey worked at that position because he was little Jordan Humphrey. You don't have a lot of guys who are running backs for a top end 6A program that have that size and have that mobility and have the speed that little Jordan Humphrey did. That's why he was so rare at that position. That's why he was so hard to take down and to defend against. You don't get many guys like that. So just saying, let's put Juan Davis out there. That's where I start to question. Darius, you put in your article that maybe you put Juan Davis out there. Why do you think Juan Davis fits?
Well, we've seen that Tom Herman is, he really, really, really likes big receivers. All right. Colin Johnson, they had a guy like Malcolm Epps. They were forcing that, in my opinion. They had Malcolm Epps starting.
See, that's what I was talking about. You can't force stuff like Malcolm Epps.
I understand, like, you know, just your most recent, you just came from seeing Epps out there. Juan Davis is a better athlete than Malcolm Epps. He Everman has him playing quarterback. Everman doesn't play the same competition as a Southlake Carroll, but when you watch him, like, he's an athletic guy. He's got quick feet. He's able to make folks miss in close quarters despite his size. He's bigger than little Jordan Humphrey. They're both about 6'3", 6'4", but Juan's already about 215 pounds. When I watch him, I haven't seen him as far as running routes. I've seen 7-on-7 clips and things like that. I mean, Will, he looks beastly. He makes some big time hands grabs and everything. I can see the projection. And again, they want a big old receiver. They want a physical mismatch out there, and he fits the description. I've never, this entire time, I guess, like, they've been trying to take two tight ends this entire time, right? But I mean, when I look at it, or what we thought they were trying to take two tight ends, but when I look at it, I mean, if Juan Davis is an athlete, I mean, Lake McRee was a receiver type. He was an H-back type. So was Landon King. And that would be, if Juan Davis is playing tight end, I would think that's what his position would be as well. So that makes me think you're not going to take two H-backs, Will. So that he has to be playing a different position. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He almost has to be. And it takes some projection. But when you see the kid in person, like, again, he's not Lil Jordan Humphrey. That was rare. Okay, you don't see guys that tall playing running back. But Juan Davis is not going to play the slot, in my opinion. He would be a guy that plays outside more like Epps or Collin, okay, not inside like Lil Jordan Humphrey. So I think people are off on the entire comparison in general just because I don't think he's going to be an inside guy, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, it's just my hesitance to say this guy, again, like you say, is going to be Lil Jordan Humphrey because he's not. He's just not going to be that dude. I guess you could have him out there in being your boundary wide receiver behind Brennan Eagles if a guy like Troy Amarie or Kennedy Lewis does not work out.
You know what they might see in Juan Davis, and it's a guy they missed on last year that they thought was a lock. And I think he actually does look a lot like him, same kind of size, Will. Remember Dalen Wright?
Dalen Wright, yeah.
I think that might be what they're kind of thinking here.
Hmm. That would be interesting. I mean, Dalen Wright was really good. I'd be interested to see that. I want to see if Juan Davis, I guess he can't play wide receiver at his school.
No, they got him. They want him touching the ball every play.
Right, exactly. So it would be something that would not be, he'd need a redshirt year and another year after that and maybe one more year after that before I think he finds his true position at Texas. So it'll be interesting. He's going to be moved all over the place. So I guess finding a guy who is a traditional tight end position for your offense, that makes sense to go along with Juan Davis. Now, looking down at the offensive line, you have another name come out, an Ezra. Oh God, names.
Ezra Oyetade.
Oyetade. Ezra Oyetade, who is right now a center, and he is starting to really turn some heads in state, given his film.
Did you say where he was from?
Yeah, another guy from Lakeview Centennial. This guy is the opposite. Well, he's the guy who goes up against Ike Iwana.
And Will, on 247, on 24/7, he's the number one rated center in the country now. And I can admit that I haven't watched him. I have not watched him yet, so he's a guy I'll have to take a look at later on.
But Texas has yet to offer him, and that's what's interesting. When you're looking through his offer list, it's a bunch of these smaller schools. But this guy, when you watch his film, he's a guy on the other side of Ike Iwana, so you know what he is. He's another mauler up front. He's that scary dude where I can remember back when I was playing football and I had to go up against a 4-star offensive lineman and just him dwarfing me with his size. It was like a shadow coming over me. That's what Ezra is like. That dude is just a big, big dude who will eat you alive up in the middle. He's definitely a guard position, and he is strong. He is a strong, strong dude. Right now, sitting at 285 pounds, if he goes into the next level, he's going to lose some weight. What's up?
I'm watching his clips right now. That dude's a beast.
Yeah. No, exactly.
And he's fast. He's a beast. How did I not notice this? I'm sitting there watching Kamar Wheaton just, you know? He's a beast.
This dude, he is quick. He's got strong hands.
He's better than Brockermeyer.
He is strong. Did I already say he's strong?
Yeah.
He's strong and he's more strong.
Look
and he's
this.
Big.
Look at him pulling. No, this is a beast. This is a bad.
This guy, he doesn't even look like he's hitting kids, and they just fall. Like I said, it reminds me of me going up against a 4-star offensive lineman. I think he's a 3-star offensive lineman, and little old me back in private high school football was getting dwarfed by this kid.
He's doing that to
6A defenders. So this kid, I don't know how he was overlooked for so long.
Oh my goodness. But
he is the real deal. Now, the question is, do you go after him and skip on a guy like James Brockemeyer at the center? And Darius, you brought up a good point. You don't really have to pick and choose here. You can take both and move this guy to your guard position.
I don't know what all the other centers, but I think 24/7 is on to something there. He's firing those snaps back there. He is pulling. He is double teaming. He's working up to the second level. He's stopping, catching guys in space. Like, this is a beast. When I redo my rankings, he's going to be somewhere in my top 25. That is impressive. You let James Brockemeyer, if you were to get those guys, you get him and you get Ezra. Great thing about that, there are three interior line positions. All right. So whoever is your best guy as far as getting the ball back to the quarterback, that's your center. And the other guy plays guard, right? Like, it's not, mm-hmm. it's not an issue. And Texas only has one lineman committed in the class so far.
And then you also, in that case, have a backup center.
Exactly. So you don't have to worry about, you're not in a situation like Texas would be in if they had something go down, God forbid, this year. They wouldn't be comfortable with, what's my man's name?
Rafidi Grimai.
We're Rafidi right now. They wouldn't be. So, no, this would be, Ezra Oyetide needs to be, he needs to be one of the top priorities moving forward. Look at this dude.
Yeah.
Look at this.
And the issue here is with his new ranking and with the new head turning he's doing, it's probably going to attract attention with other programs as well. So that means since Texas wasn't in on it first, they're now in on it with everybody else. Now, obviously, being the in-state school, that's going to help them, but
he's big on academics. Like, right. He's looking at schools right now like Virginia, like Vanderbilt. You know what I'm saying? He's big on academics. So that could be something that helps too.
Right. And Rice, Navy was another one, Army, mm-hmm. Penn. So, yeah, exactly. He's a big athletic dude, very smart guy. He's the entire package and then some. So he just got off a virtual visit with Texas. Apparently it went all right. We'll see how Texas does and what they think of him. If they give him an offer anytime soon, they damn well should. So we'll see. It's a guy who a very impressive, very exciting. Another top offensive lineman in this 2021 class in the state of Texas.
It's all about evaluation, man. It's all about evaluation. But that's
this 2021 class, man. Whew. It is chock full offensive linemen. Think about this. Like, let's just daydream for a second. You have this is never gonna happen. Brockemeyer as your left tackle, Bryce Foster. Then you have Ezra Oyetade at center, James Brockemeyer, and then Hayden Connor. That's your starting five right there in your front. That's a hell of an offensive line team right
on
there.
On paper, yeah.
On paper, that's a hell of a team. I doubt it would be. It'll happen. I don't think Texas would land all those guys. Sometimes it's a game of luck. So
I think though, hey, now seeing this though, this has to getting a guy like Ezra would have to help with Kamar Wheaton. He plays with him, he practices with him every day.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much I wanna, but your title needs to be a very high
but
priority.
But I wanna still land. I wanna.
Oh, well, you said I wanna again. I need a button. Where's the button? Where's the ba-doom? Sheesh.
But, all right. I think we're getting off there with Oyetade and Kamar Wheaton, the dream of the Power Five front. That's all nice and good. Let's get Texas should offer Oyetade. It would help out with Kamar Wheaton. Has to help out with Kamar Wheaton. Get Iwana. Just take those three guys from Lakeview Centennial. They jump off the page. They jump off the screen when it comes to the videos. So I'm happy with that, with those three evaluations.
Yeah, and fun fact about Garland ISD, that's the only school district I've ever heard of that allows their middle schoolers to choose where they want to go to school.
Interesting.
So it's probably not an accident those guys are all together either.
But I like that. That's a good system, I think.
Think so. I think it can cause it can cause an unfair competitive advantage.
Well, I'm talking about in terms of not just athletics, but in academics as well.
I feel you on that. School that provides a better program. If you already know what you want to do, which I feel like is not a lot of kids, but.
Right. No. But I like that. Okay. But on that note, that's going to be your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. And I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, where can we find you?
Y'all can find me on Twitter as well, DTerrell05. Holla at me.
All the sports are starting to come back. You got slowly dates for surely. NBA. You got dates. Well,
man, that NBA stuff ain't going to work, man. It's not going to work. Oh, yeah. You're going to ask professional basketball players to stay in a bubble for 3 months? No women? No what? What? That's going to get broken.
Right?
That's going to get shut down. That's going to get shut down.
James Harden is a strip club fiend, so I wonder what's going to happen there.
He ain't the only one. But look, that's gonna last about a week, and that thing's getting shut down. That's not going to happen, man.
We'll see.
That's they didn't think about that. That's not real. It sounds good and all. That's not going to happen, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
We'll see. I hope sports comes back. Well, I mean, I guess it's already come back with soccer and NASCAR and all that. But
they're not in the bubble with no contact outside. Yeah, it's not going to work.
And you guys can find us and other shows like this on the Horns Cast channel. It's the Horns Cast channel on any podcasting platform out there. Or you guys can find us and our work on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. That's most of our work out there. And I think on that note, we're getting it off there. Thank you all for listening. And we'll see y'all next week or next time we do the show. It's really hard to get together with this at this time of year. With nothing going on. But yeah, thank you all for listening. See ya. Hook 'em.
See ya.